IVM. You're listening to the podcast presented by the Daily Pow. This is Pronuti
and Amit,
and we're from the Daily Pow, a city-specific food and culture platform. And this is our weekly podcast, The Powdcast. Now, today, we're going to do an episode of The Scene in which we talk about culture in the city. And we're going to be discussing the ongoing show at the Chhatrapati Shivaji Maharaj Vastu Sangrahalaya, also formerly known as the Prince of Wales Museum. It's called India and the World, A History in 9 Stories. So stay tuned for The Scene.
Scene.
Now, today on The Scene, we're going to be talking about an ongoing exhibition at the Prince of Wales Museum. And I think we're just going to say Prince of Wales Museum because the full form is way too long.
CSMBS.
Or CSMBS, yeah. So the show is called India and the World, A History in 9 Stories. And we've been hearing about the show all year. It's the biggest show to take place at the museum this year. It opened on the 11th of November and it will go on till February the 18th. Now, this show is really about the history of civilization, and it's been told through around 230 objects that have been sourced from museums across India and the British Museum in England. So here's how it's organized. It's organized according to 9 principles and...
Well, 9 sort of subsections, which they've called Shared Beginnings, First Cities, Empires, State and Faith, Picturing the Divine, Indian Ocean Traders, Court Cultures, Quest for Freedom, and Time Unbound. So we thought we'd sort of take you through these different sections and tell you what they're about, and also our picks of, this massive exhibition. Like we said, over 200 objects. And so really, I mean, for you to sort of go through all of them, it's going to take you a few hours. So what I did basically was I did the audio tour, which is about 24 highlights. But Pran, you sort of went and did it sort of on your own, and you actually saw some things that I missed, I guess, because they really had to pick and choose when it came to the audio tour.
Yeah. So, I mean, this show, it marks 70 years of independence. I mean, that's why they're doing this show. And as you said, it starts with Shared Beginnings. And Shared Beginnings is essentially goes back 1.7 million years ago.
Of the sort of basically the beginning of humankind.
Yeah. And so the exhibits in this section are, tools that human beings fashioned back then.
Back then, and sort of talks about a little bit how basically all of humanity originated in Africa.
Yeah, and then sort of branched out across the world, in particular Asia.
And Europe.
And so in this section, you have a series of hand axes. And these are sort of basic tools used to, say, skin animals. And do all kinds of very sort of, basic things.
They were basically the first tool, the hand axe,
exactly,
which is fashioned from stone.
What's interesting is that they're all, the shape is similar. They're all flint shaped, essentially, like a pear drop.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting to see is how people in different parts of the world, and you have hand axes from India, from Europe, from the Middle East, how they all figured the same thing out, that this was the most logical shape.
Yeah, I think also there's the implication that they've traveled, the technology, as it were, the hand axes. I mean, travel from one place to the other. And they've got, hand axes that are believed to be, 1.7 million years old in this. And they've juxtaposed, one of the first things that you see is this two hand axes, which are similarly shaped. One is from Tanzania, and the other one was found in Chennai, present-day Chennai. Of course, thousands of years old. But, so, I mean, basically, the idea of this exhibition is basically to show you, compare things that are Indian with things from across the world and see the commonalities between the two. And so they do this throughout. So the idea of getting things from the British Museum and their expansive collection and artifacts from museums
across
India.
Yeah, it's really to show how ideas and inventions traveled.
Yeah.
And then the next section is cities. It's cities.
Which talks about the, earliest forms of urbanization. And, when you talk about that, you can't not talk about the Indus Valley civilization. And if anybody who's ever studied Indian history will be very pleased to find the statue of the dancing girl here, which you've we've all seen in our textbooks and read about, and now to actually see it, it's quite amazing.
Yeah, the dancing girl from Mohenjo-Daro. I mean, like, I remember the picture very clearly in my history textbook. And when you look at pictures, you get the impression that the statue is actually much bigger than it actually is.
Yeah, and this one's really tiny. It's the size of a toothpick or something like that.
No, I mean, it's bigger than a toothpick for sure. But when you see it, you kind of really, you do get the shock of pleasure because you're seeing something that's very familiar to you, that you've seen as a child, and here you're seeing the actual thing.
And the thing that they talk about is, you know, she's called the dancing girl, but like nobody really knows her profession.
Yeah.
And you know, because she's not exactly dancing.
She's not dancing. She's just standing with her hand on her hip. And right next to her is a sculpture of a woman from Mesopotamia. And again, you know, the idea is to compare women across cultures, you know, cultures that existed at the same time. There is another,
I just want to say one more thing about this lady. She has a monobrow, and one of the things that they talk about, how that was a sign of great beauty in those times, in those ancient times.
Yeah, well, Kajol should have been
in
born back then.
And in one of them, if she was in Iraq, she would be a superstar.
Exactly. But you know, in that section there is also limestone head of a man who looks very similar to the Harappan priest, who we're also very familiar with, you know, like along with the dancing girl, we've all seen pictures of that priest. But he looks similar, but it's not the same guy. Also in this section, one of the things that I really liked seeing was this Egyptian soul house. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've been to any major museum in the world, you would have, you know, that has a substantial, you know, Egyptian collection. Mm-hmm. You would have seen exhibits related to Egyptian funerary rites. Mm-hmm. You know, while sort of burying bodies, they buried all kinds of things that that, you know, the soul could carry into the next life. So this soul house is a clay model of a house, of an Egyptian house. And so you have a house, you have a courtyard, you have food and meat in the courtyard, and the idea is that, you know, this person will be well fed in the next life. So that was,
see, now that was not in the audio tour, and I want to go back and see what it looks like. But moving on to the next, we have the empire section, and in that they have actually something that was found very close to where we live in Bombay, in what we know as Nala Supara, or just Supara. And it's an Ashokan edict. Well, it's a part of the Ashokan edict. And it talks about, you know, basically
peace.
And it's really nice because it talks a little bit about the futility of rituals and more about how you should be kind to your fellow man. You
know? Right. And, I mean, this Ashokan edict, it's part of the collection
of the
museum.
It's part of the regular collection. So,
you can
see it
even
otherwise
after
also.
This
yeah.
exhibition. But what I really liked are these three heads of emperors. So you have a head of a Kushan king, you have a head sculpture in the style of Alexander, and you have sort of this bronze head of Hadrian. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I read Hadrian, I immediately thought of Game of Thrones. And I think every Game of Thrones fan read GOT trivia will think of the wall in the TV show, because the wall beyond which there are wildlings and white walkers is modeled after Hadrian's Wall. And Hadrian's Wall was like the northernmost point of the Roman Empire.
Okay.
So that was fun to see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The next section is State and Faith. And it talks about how these empires use religion as sort of, almost like a propaganda tool in a sense.
That's right. So, for example, a lot of monarchs used coins to spread faith. So, you know, you have these gold coins of the Persian king Shapur.
Yeah.
And you have, say, the head of the king. Mm-hmm. And you also have fire. As Zoroastrians worship fire. And
so there was two. So one side had the face of the emperor, and the other side had
the idea is to suggest that the king is God's representative
and
on earth.
Yeah, so that's and the thing is, like, again, we mentioned that they're trying to make these kind of connections and how these commonalities. And so right next to this Sasanian coin is a coin from the Gupta Empire, which was almost exactly the same thing, where you have the image of the king and you have, I think, an image of Lakshmi on the other side, trying to show you that, look, there's a clear connection between, like, these are the chosen, you know, people to rule over you.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, so sort of this is really interesting. And, like, similarly, they've got, like, this sculpture of a sitting Ganesh you know, statue where he's seated, and how it's from Indonesia, and how they're, you know, it's different from, it looks quite different from the standard representation that, you know, we've come to know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's common across India, for instance.
Okay. And then in Picturing the Divine, which is the next section, you have a lot of sculptures of, you know, gods and deities. And the one that caught my eye was a very, you know, primitive looking sculpture in wood of a Taino god, and this was from Jamaica. It's like a 15th century sculpture. And what is striking about this sculpture is that the god seems to be crying. You know, there are tears streaming down his face. And the inscription reads that, you know, priests would attempt to, you know, get into a state of trance,
mm-hmm,
in order to reach the divine.
Mm-hmm.
So this god is shown to be in a trance-like state.
Okay.
And it's, you know, sculpturally seemed quite unique and quite different from the other sculptures, mm-hmm, over there. So Indian Ocean Traders, which is the next section, really talks about, you know, trade across the Indian Ocean, trade between various civilizations and cultures that took place across the Indian Ocean. One of the first exhibits in this, mm-hmm, section is a Roman pepper pot that was found in Britain.
Yeah.
And this pepper pot shows Hercules grappling with Antaeus, and the bottom of this object has a chamber for pepper.
Yeah.
And pepper, as we all know, was grown in India.
And was considered a big luxury.
It was considered a huge luxury, and you know, the spice trade, which between South India, between the Malabar coast and across the world, is quite famous.
Yeah, and in the same display is a statue of Poseidon, which was found, I mean, it's from 1 AD apparently. It was found in Maharashtra somewhere, and it says it was probably some seafarer stash that was discovered years and years later. And so, you know, I think, again, the idea is to show that these both are figures from Greek mythology, but were found in completely different places.
But the exhibit that I really liked is Rhinoceros After Durer, and it's an engraving from 1548 found in Italy.
So it's actually a copy of the engraving made by this German artist called Durer. And according to the information that I heard over the audio guide, it said that basically that he had never actually seen a rhino, but at that time, exotic animals were considered a great gift between, you know, different rulers and, you know, sort of traders. And so this was actually given as a gift from the rhino. A rhino was actually given as a gift from the Sultan of Gujarat to the Portuguese, who wanted to send up a trading station off the west coast of India. And so this rhino actually traveled from Gujarat to, traveled over sea to Europe. And that's how basically rhinos came to reach that continent. They had never seen rhinos, at least.
Exactly. And this rhino was then later sent to the Pope, but it perished on the way.
A gift from the Portuguese to the Pope.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting because, you know, there's also a very... there's a play that has a very similar story to this, right?
Yeah, so in, Adyam, which is a theatre initiative conducted by the Aditya Birla Group, the third season concluded, you know, just recently. And one of the plays of this season is a play called Gajab Kahani, which traces the journey of an elephant,
mm-hmm,
from India to Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, again, it's
a very similar story.
It is a
except
similar
that it's an elephant instead of a rhinoceros.
And the elephant survives the journey.
Okay.
It gets to Portugal. And it just shows that how, you know, at the time, people were still discovering the world,
mm-hmm,
you know. And, you know, people hadn't seen exotic animals like rhinos and elephants.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just very common for monarchs to gift each other exotic creatures.
Yeah.
Then we come to
court cultures.
Court cultures, which is a really interesting section again. And just the first things in this section struck me. There are two sort of pictures from the Babarnama,
mm-hmm,
which is a 16th century text folio. And the first one shows Babar feasting in Kohat. And this was Babur's first incursion into the continent. Now, Babur left his home in Central Asia and traveled to the subcontinent to set up an empire. So he was the first Mughal ruler.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's just always a joy to look at, Persian art because it's just so beautiful and so finely detailed. And the other illustration is of Babur hunting a rhino, which is probably something he hadn't seen either before he arrived on the subcontinent near Peshawar. There's also this beautiful, beautiful copy of a Ming scroll showing occupations of court ladies. And again, this is like a, it's a long scroll and it shows, you know, Chinese women doing courtly things like doing up their hair or watching parrots or playing mahjong, you know, things like that. And one of the last set of exhibits in this section is a set of astronomical instruments from various courts. You know, for example, there's this lovely celestial sphere from a Mughal court from the 17th century, which is quite nice.
And then next we come to sort of very recent history in Quest for Freedom, which talks about, you know, countries that have recently gained independence, like over the last century. And the first thing that we see there actually is this very sort of interesting statue of Queen Victoria from Nigeria. And it is a wooden statue, and it actually sort of looks, I mean, they it's a sculpture where she looks like an African queen.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, it's difficult to say whether this was intentionally subversive or not, but it definitely seems subversive because, I mean, it looks like it has a likeness of Queen Victoria, but she looks like an African woman.
Well, I think it's made in the traditional African style.
Yeah, the Yoruba style.
Yeah, and which they talk about where, you know, the statues all have feet. Now, the thing is, so they even made, even sculpted her feet, but apparently nobody had seen her feet before because
Queen Victoria has never photographed showing her feet.
Exactly. But the sad part is that even in the sculpture, the feet, they've sculpted the feet, they're concealed by her gown, so you can't really see it.
Exactly, you can't see them. There are also a couple of great sepia-tinted photos by Felice Beato, the famous photographer who shot a lot of images, you know, during colonial times. And these are photos of the aftermath of the 1857 mutiny. There's also a certificate from the Slave Registry Office from South Africa in 1828. And in this certificate is of this one particular slave. It gives his name, his mother's name, and the woman who bought him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so quite an interesting document.
Yeah. And, you know, this section also has some modern and contemporary art, Indian art. It's got, for instance, you know, painting of Amrita Shergill of, you know, it's called Two Girls. And it's also got a video work by the Rux Media Collective. But I think, again, for people who are sort of remembering their school days, the most interesting thing to see here might be this facsimile of the preamble page of the Constitution, the Indian Constitution. And it's actually, it looks amazing because it's like got these, the borders or the margins have like got these detailed illustrations.
Yeah. I actually, when I saw that, I was a little moved, you know, because it talks about justice and equality.
Yeah, and secular and how and all these things that we don't really seem to be living that just 70 years down the line.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the last, well, couple of years, I think these values have been flouted more than ever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was kind of moving to see that.
Yeah. And then the last section is something called Time Unbound. And this talks about how some cultures, like, time isn't considered linear. And especially in, like, Aboriginal culture, for instance. And this is actually a really small section. And I kind of feel that it was
odd.
It's slightly odd. And it was kind of like just tagged on to make it 9 stories. I don't know why. But so it's a really small section. And the sort of highlight of this is this massive sculpture by Ellen Talur. And it's depicting, you know, Shiva. Actually, this sculpture represents Shiva and the idea of destruction and rebirth. And what's remarkable about it is that it's this huge sort of orb, this ball of concrete and coins. And the idea is to basically say, I think that today, in today's day and age, concrete and money are almost like a form of destruction because that's what's happening around us, you know. And I mean, this sculpture apparently is so heavy. It weighs apparently 850 kilos. And they couldn't, it's on loan from the Kiran Nadar Museum of Art in Delhi. And it actually had to be lifted to the second floor by crane because it could have been just too heavy to take through the museum. So I think they had to sort of make a hole through one of the windows or something like that and just bring it by crane. So incredible. The other couple of things in this section are just a couple of Aboriginal paintings, and again they're very nicely detailed and colourful, and they tell the story.
They sort of depict dream time.
Yeah, which is an Aboriginal concept.
Which is an Aboriginal idea, and the idea is to show that while the exhibits in the show have been arranged chronologically, not every culture views time as chronological, as linear.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the idea of this of this exhibit.
Yeah. So there's a lot to take in. I mean, you can spend an entire day in the museum just viewing this particular exhibition. It's spread across two floors, across multiple halls. But it's very sort of lucidly done. I would say it's actually worth doing the audio tour. It's only $50. But also take time to check out the other stuff as well. Because like we mentioned, you might miss some of the really interesting, exhibits as well.
So that's it for this episode, and we'll be back next week. For updates on city events, you can check out our Facebook, Instagram and Twitter pages. We're The Daily POW on all three. You can listen to the POWdcast on the IVM website, the IVM app, or your favorite podcasting platform.